Welcome to the Cars Coffee Theology Podcast. CCT is dedicated to providing you caffeinated vehicular conversations with thoughtful people. Our main medium is our YouTube channel, but we also wanted to provide you an audio-only version of all the episodes from Chapter 1. So here it is. Thanks for tuning in. My guest today is Dr. Tom Schreiner, well-known and well-loved author, teacher, and New Testament scholar. Tom has published many influential books, including several great commentaries. He's always nuanced, thoughtful, and balanced, as you'll see in this very enjoyable conversation.
Cars, coffee, theology.
Okay, so welcome.
Well, oh, I mean, thank you. Thank you.
So good to be here. You're welcoming me, too. I see how you are. You are probably a rare guest in that I've known this about you for a long time. You don't like coffee.
Right? I don't like coffee.
Okay, nor does your son, which my former student.
Right, right.
But there is something you said you do like. What was it?
Mint green tea at Starbucks, I do like.
All right, we can do that. We can definitely do that. So a question I always like to ask people is, what was your first car?
My first car that I remember that I owned was a Super Beetle.
What is a Super Beetle?
It's the Volkswagen.
Right.
But they called it not just a Beetle, but a Super Beetle.
Now,
why was it called a Super Beetle? I don't remember. I'm not a car person.
Right, okay.
But actually, my brother bought it as a brand new car.
Wow.
And he got in two or three wrecks and got tickets. He had to get rid of the car because he had to get rid of all insurance, and therefore I got the car.
Nice.
And we had it for years. We had it until.
You bought it from him, or is your parents had bought it?
My parents bought it for me.
Okay.
And we Diane and I had it, and that was before I was married. We had it until we had Patrick, who was our second son, and then we decided we needed more room with two children and a Beetle. It was pretty crowded. Really?
Do I remember seeing an old picture of you guys having a VW van as well?
That's what we bought next.
We
stayed in the Volkswagen family. We went from the Super Beetle to the van, and that van had for a Volkswagen. That I don't know enough about cars to give you specs, but it had power.
Right? Did it?
It was a good car.
I don't know either. Okay.
Yeah.
So what are you working on most recently? So 1 Corinthians commentary just came out.
And,
is that right?
And my Revelation, although the Revelation commentary I actually wrote 4 or 5 years ago, but it was in this 12-volume commentary series coming out from Crossway. So, I had to wait for 2 Peter and Jude and for 2nd and 3rd.
Releasing them all at once?
Yeah, so it's 12. It's a popular commentary.
Yeah, that's great.
I have maybe 10 footnotes in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's actually quite fun to write.
Yeah, well, Jim Hamilton asked me to write it, and I said, if I don't have to do any footnotes.
Yeah, totally. And you had preached through Revelation around the same time.
And I've taught it several times. And
right. Hey, 1 second.
The mint green tea.
What size? Grande?
Large. Yeah.
Okay. Large or grande? Which is it?
I don't.
Just kidding. All right. We need a grande mint green tea.
But right now, I just sent to InterVarsity a really light revision of my Pauline theology.
Okay.
But what I mean by light is I carefully looked at it two more times and added more literature, but it's more just exposition of Paul. It's not really an exposition of scholarship.
Right.
And then since then, my big project has been, I'm at the age where everything's being revised.
Yeah.
I'm revising 1st, 2nd Peter and Jude.
Are you? Okay.
Because that series, the NAC series,
is being rebooted.
It's the Christian Standard Commentary Series.
That's the one I'm doing.
Patrick's doing Acts.
Patrick's doing Acts. Right. Yeah. And so you're just, good, you're not getting kicked out.
I'm not getting kicked out. I know.
Most of the people just get kicked out of that thing. So,
yeah. Awesome. I'm really happy. And I've already.
That'd be fun to have a father and son. I bet there aren't too many commentary series that have a father and a son.
I never thought of that.
That's pretty cool. Oh, do you want hot? Was it hot tea you wanted?
Yeah, this is hot.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Actually,
I assumed it was an iced tea, but I don't know.
Oh, wow. They put that in.
Not going to work yet. They really filled
ouch.
It up. Maybe you can put it in.
I got to put it. I don't have it on.
It's probably going to be a little. Well, that's what you get for drinking tea.
Yeah. Another passage that's really interested me is 1 Peter 3, the call the wives to submit. Yeah. And what's sort of precipitated my interest is the Me Too movement.
Right, okay.
Because, you know, when I first wrote it, I wasn't thinking much at all about abuse of women.
Right, but that kind of gives a new social context for our reading of those texts.
Right, right. And there's been
without a word, not rebelling back or, you know, yeah, wow. That's
but
good.
A lot of, actually, there have been a lot of interesting feminist articles on that passage that I've
read,
learned from.
Yeah, that's great.
I don't agree with everything, but I've learned from them. And of course, there's a spectrum. Some argue we should just throw away what Peter says. But others argue, and I think this is right, that when you read Peter carefully, it's really pretty nuanced. Plutarch says that a wife should, I'm paraphrasing, a wife should in all things follow the religion of her husband.
Hmm.
But Peter doesn't agree with that.
Right.
I mean, clearly, he's calling upon these Christian wives to be Christians with
right.
non-believing husbands.
Yeah, I see.
So there is a...
Huh.
There,
it's like more empowering to women than maybe
right.
Stoicism or other things.
And there's a subversion in the passage.
Yeah, yeah.
Already.
Right.
A subversion of the cultural standard, because I think we tend to read the passage and think, well, that's a very conservative passage. But I think Peter's contemporaries would have read that passage and said, that's surprising.
Right.
The wife has an independent status as a woman to follow Christ.
Right.
And not to do what her husband would probably prefer.
Right.
What Peter does, no exhortations to masters, one verse for husbands. Peter focuses on slaves, wives, citizens who submit to governing authority. He focuses on the person who is under authority and more liable to be oppressed.
Mm. And encourages them.
And he encourages them and says, look, that's how Christ lived.
Right.
Christ is our example. He was also oppressed. Your identity is in him, but your calling as a disciple is the same calling as your Lord. Obviously, there are differences.
Right.
Peter features the distinctiveness of Jesus' atoning death. And yet, and this has been pointed out by many people, almost everywhere in the New Testament, I'm sure you've seen this, where Christ's atonement for sins is featured, there's also an exemplary thing.
Thank you. They're exemplar, absolutely.
They're tied together
absolutely.
Almost every time.
Yep.
So that's quite fascinating because as evangelicals, sometimes we've focused on the atonement, rightly so, but to the neglect of the exemplary thing.
Yeah.
And the fascinating thing is to see how they're tied together.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Totally agree. I mean, that's been a big part of my concern as a New Testament scholar is emphasizing the virtue formative element of the Christian faith and the gospel itself. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I loved your Sermon on the Mount book. That was a great, helpful,
but
shaping book for me.
That's all we need to say then. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for having you on. That's what we were trying to get to, and now stop the recording. We got it.
And now a book that's very similar to yours. I forget the title
Jeff
now.
Jeff Dryden.
What's the title of that book? Hermeneutics of Wisdom?
A Hermeneutic of Wisdom.
Something like that.
And then the subtitle is something about recovering the formative agency of Scripture, which is a great subtitle.
I'm almost done with that book.
Good.
But that is a very profound book as well.
I agree. And I totally agree. Easy to blurb. I was very happy to blurb it, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, very much along the same lines of what you did in the Sermon on the Mount.
And, yeah.
And he footnotes you several times.
So, spiritual gifts. So that's another recent book in your production.
Yeah.
Which I happen to have right here.
Okay. All right.
You'll take that and choose a number between 100 and 150. Give me a number between 100 and
73.
All right. Turn to page 73. Read a paragraph out of there. See if it makes any sense.
We see clearly in the following verses, 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7, that love involves emotions. For love, Paul tells us, is not jealous, and jealousy is an emotion. Love is not provoked and irritated, and irritation is an emotion. Indeed, God commands us to refrain from unrighteous anger, and anger is an emotion. Yes, God gives us commands that relate to our emotions, and he summons us to obey what we cannot obey apart from his grace.
Okay. You want to comment on that? Do you remember what the broader context of the argument is? Or?
Well, in the middle of my discussion on spiritual gifts, it's the way Paul frames the discussion. He has 1 Corinthians 13 in the middle. So I have a section in which I say, this is a very practical book. I have a section in which I say that love is most important. So this book is a trade book.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never written a trade book.
Yeah,
so
get the crossover, like Amy Grant going from Christian music to pop music.
Well,
the trade book.
I'm sure I'll make as much as Amy Grant has made on this book.
That's the goal. Well, especially with your singing.
Maybe if I sing this book, if that would become my spiritual gift.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote this book, so I am what I call a nuanced cessationist.
I saw that in there.
I wrote this book, and I wanted to write a book that defended that view, which obviously many people disagree with, but I wanted to write a book on this issue that was charitable and loving, because I think one of the things that's true in our evangelical circles, but in our culture at large, is the ability to have loving conversations where we disagree. I mean, it's our whole cultural context today. It's crazy.
Very polarized now, yeah.
So I dedicated this book to John Piper, Sam Storms, and Wayne Grudem. Those three men are good friends of mine, especially John, but Wayne and Sam as well, and they're continuationists. They passionately disagree with me. They're passionate people.
Right.
So I wanted to say, can we talk about things like this, and in which we disagree in a friendly way? And I say right at the beginning, this is not a make or break issue for me. Perhaps I'm mistaken. Maybe they're right. It seemed to me in my very limited circles that almost everyone I talked to thought any kind of cessationist position was kind of not crazy, but unlikely. So I thought, I don't think it's that unlikely, and I lean that way, and so I wanted to write a defense of it. So at ETS this year, Lig Duncan and I are going to have a conversation with Sam Storms and Andrew Wilson.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah,
that's really great. I'm sure that'll be very kind, because you guys are all good men. I don't know Andrew Wilson, but...
Well, yeah. Andrew's, do you know his name at all?
I don't
Andrew's
think I do.
A charismatic pastor in England.
Okay.
Good guy. He just wrote his dissertation on the warning passages in 1 Corinthians, published in Wundt.
I just
finished it. A great book.
Yeah, that's great.
So I think very highly of, and I hope we can model a friendly conversation where we can talk about these issues.
You don't do, and you're conscious of not doing, the typically really poor argument for cessationism. 1 Corinthians 13, the proverb will come. I mean, I was thankful to see that you don't go down that road.
Yeah.
And then to see in the next chapter, I believe it is, you make a different kind of argument, which is much more nuanced and gracious, which is who you are, brother. I mean, you're a beautiful person, and you are nuanced and gracious and thoughtful. And so it is that, even though I don't think I agree with you either on these things. But I was...
Heaven forfend! No.
I walk home. But, I just, although I have to say that in glancing through that, chapter, I thought, okay, at least this is a much more thoughtful argument for cessationism, kind of pragmatically and theologically, than I remember seeing, you know?
Yeah, it's certainly not a open and shut case, because I would argue, again, that my case is built on exegesis and experience. Mm-hmm. And one of my arguments is, perhaps I'm wrong on this, I'm happy to be instructed, but I think contemporary continuationists redefine the gifts to fit our present experience. Mm. That I could be mistaken.
Yeah,
but yeah. I don't think they're quite the same thing as we find in the New Testament.
I guess part of your argument is that it's like tongues, we'll take tongues example. That's, you see it as languages, for sure.
Yes, but tongues, I mean, honestly, tongues isn't a big issue for me in this book. What drives me more is the prophecy argument.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Prophecy is more important to me. Is prophecy in the New Testament, contrary to the Old Testament, fallible, as Grudem and others argue?
Grudem's old argument on that.
Yeah, which, you know, virtually all the charismatics I know, they embrace Grudem.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it makes for a way to understand the experience and the text.
Yeah.
I mean, you're absolutely right.
Right. Whereas I argue that the experience Grudem is speaking of, we all have today, I would call that experience impressions. God impresses things upon us, and those can be legitimate.
It shouldn't be called prophecy. You should preserve
it. But it should not be called prophecy, I argue. C.H. Spurgeon was a cessationist. But one time when he was preaching, he looked up in the balcony, and he pointed to a person, and he said something like, "You stole the pair of gloves." And the guy did.
Right, right.
And he became
a
believer.
Was he in the regular habit of calling out all kinds of people? Most of the time he was in wrong, and that time he just got it right.
No.
You stole this, you stole this. No,
yeah,
this
right.
was like a unique instance. This wasn't a regular habit. For
that was a unique instance, yeah. And he didn't say, "That worked great, I'll try it again next Sunday."
You stole something. I'm sensing that someone stole something in this room. Raise your hand if you feel convicted.
Right. Edwards thought a lot about these things because he saw a lot of experience.
Sure, of course, right, yeah.
And Edwards was a cessationist as well, but he believed in impressions. But I think Edwards very wisely said, but you cannot base your life on impressions or try to live on the basis of them, and now I'm paraphrasing Edwards in contemporary idiom, or you'll become wacko. I think Edwards says you'll become like a jack-o'-lantern.
Is that what he says?
Yeah.
That is awesome.
But I think
so
what he basically means...
So that metaphor has changed now. It's a jack-o'-lantern. That's really funny.
Edwards would never say wacko, even if he were alive today.
Right.
But, I mean, that's the danger.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but at least experientially, I'm not throwing out what Grudem sees. It's just, what do we call it? And
similarly, if I gathered... tongues, again, maybe qualify this if I'm wrong, but if I understand what you're saying, you recognize there might be something that is tongues that's a, would you call it an utterance or an ex, you know, I don't know what you call it. You call it some kind of utterance, but that's different than tongues more technically as a language. Is that right?
I would, yes.
Similar nuance.
I pick up on what Packer says, that contemporary tongues aren't quite the same thing as this spiritual gift in biblical times, but I don't mean to be offensive to charismatics, because sometimes they are offended when I say this, but Packer says it's kind of a form of psychological relaxation. He says it's sort of like singing scat, but...
Interesting, right? Yeah. But you're acknowledging, you're saying there is some kind of utterance that isn't necessarily bad or wrong.
I'm not saying it's demonic.
It's not tongues, per se.
Because there are streams out there that say it's demonic, evil, charismatics are... you know, very dangerous. Now, I do want to say, you know, there are extreme elements of the charismatic movement, the health, wealth movement and all that is dangerous.
Right.
But I'm talking about mainstream evangelical charismatics.
So in both those instances, prophecy and tongues, then you're sort of carving out a very nuanced, careful position, it seems, that you can acknowledge, again, these things exist. You're not saying they're necessarily wrong. You're just trying to say, let's think carefully about what to label them so as to not create a confusion or extenuated confusion relative to the text.
Yeah. Well, I don't think the impressions are prophecy. Since I would argue that prophecy is infallible.
Right.
So I don't think there are prophets today. I think prophecy has always been viewed as infallible in the biblical narrative.
Sure. So over on your right in the little thing, there are some colored envelopes.
Uh-huh.
I'll grab one of those. And in them, you can choose whichever one you want.
Okay.
I have no idea what's in them. There are
okay.
some...
Ow! I can't get
it. You'll see me in court.
Yeah.
There are various questions.
Okay.
And you can put that down.
Okay, yeah.
Various questions, and you will give your answer to it, short answer to it, and I'll also commit to trying to answer the same question. I don't know what's in there either. So.
This is cool. What nervous habits do you have? You know, someone just told me, I'm going to have to work on this, that when I lecture, I kind of go from side to side, you know?
Like doing like the floss?
I don't know. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I can't do that, but I don't think it's really nervous, but at least it's a habit,
just a habit.
That I've gotten into where I kind of go. It was funny because it was a Sunday school class and okay. this person was visiting and she said, you're the professor who kind of goes from side to side.
Oh my, that's like, the worst. You're in third hand.
I
right?
know, and I'm like, oh, okay. Is that the right do that? And I was,
don't worry about 50 books published, great father, husband, recognized, gracious man. Oh, you're the side to side professor.
Yeah. So it's your turn.
Oh, I hate to admit, I bite my nails a lot. And I've noticed that, and I have probably forever, but I've noticed more when I'm, definitely when I'm anxious and, or kind of fidgety, like if I'm really needing to concentrate on writing or something. I find myself doing that a lot, which I'm not proud of. You know, it's somewhat embarrassing, but thanks a lot for asking, jerk.
Right. I don't think it's a big deal. Yeah, you know, things like
free?
That.
What? Okay, I'm free?
You're free.
Oh, phew.
Go ahead,
okay.
keep doing it.
You absolve me?
Yeah.
In a good Protestant sense. Okay.
Yeah, we have the screen up between us.
Right. Well, I have one. I actually have a button that comes down. And, so anyways, well, this has been great, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Pleasure to chat with you.
Well, thank you. It was fun. I really enjoyed it.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode. I know you're tempted to stop the recording right now and not listen to what I'm about to say, but it's really important. Make sure you subscribe to our social media and especially our YouTube channel. We also have a Patreon account if you want to support us that way. Thanks again. We'll see you on the road.